I've seen them down at the park, at the little streams and you know, where the water comes out and everything. And I'm quite concerned, not only for me being accused of this thing, me not having my kids in my life these last 6 years, but also for the welfare of some of these kids. Some of the things they do is so sexually explicit. I feel for the children myself. You know, the last couple times we didn't know if it came from you. We have a report. It came from the state agencies. It was handed somewhere else. And we need to figure this out, because if me, an innocent man, could be accused of any kind of sex trafficking or it being set up, then others can too. And I have gone to the hospital numerous times because of these people. So we need to handle this. And I don't think you could hide the fact that even on the streets they have mission trips that come from out of the state. I don't think our regular locals like being set up in the park for different activity, because it's the same house that I was lured into, but it's out in the street.
Thanks for your testimony. I really need you to follow up with the state agencies. This is an issue that you rightfully referenced as a state issue. It's outside of our jurisdictions. When you were here last, we looked into it. So I need you to follow up with the state agencies. We don't have jurisdiction over this issue.
Which one? Well, where can I go?
I would encourage you. What neighborhood do you live in Portland?
I live down here. I haven't lived in a house ever since I was lured into two of these houses.
I would
hospital stays. And,
yeah, go ahead.
You could stop downstairs in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. The information and referral specialist can help you find the right person in the state. So just go right downstairs. And the Office of Neighborhood Involvement is right there, and we have
neighborhood involvement. It's
yes,
okay.
And so they can help you find the right agency in the state.
Okay, thank you.
I don't want to waste your time here, because we just don't have jurisdiction over this issue.
Okay,
thank you. Can you please read the title for item number 477?
Request of Martin Slapikas to address council regarding Hayden Island Neighborhood Network Neighborhood Sustainability Program.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, I've got to admit, I'm Martin Slapikas. I'm representing the Hayden Island Neighborhood Network. It's a neighborhood, Hayden Island Neighborhood Association, also known as High Noon. Frankly, if I had known that the Lincoln Constitutional Team was supposed to be here, I would have asked them to make this presentation. I trust you've received the Hayden Island Sustainability Program, and it was designed and based on three legs: economic development, environmental stewardship, and social responsibility. Every one of these issues are concerning us because of the impact that is mentioned in the resolution that you should have before you. 15 different agencies, development by private and public support. We've got criminal activity going on. All of these things are affecting the livability of our island on an ongoing, as I speak, basis. What I'm here for is to ask that you, our city council, essentially become our strongest lobbyists when we face some of these issues. And some of the questions that need to be asked that do not seem to be asked at the various meetings I've attended. For an example, when we talk about the CRC, you have an attachment that contains the island's mitigation desires. Frankly, why don't we do advanced mitigation? Start some of the mitigation that's going on right now to correct the issues that are happening now. They're all in there. 3 minutes isn't enough time to delve into that, but what I'd like to do is make a point of saying that we will be contacting each one of your offices, both current and new members of the council, to address these much more in detail. But consider the issue of the potential annexation of West Hayden Island. One of the questions that I have not heard asked is, why is it there is no interest by the port or state authorities, nor is there a proposal to form a joint port authority before you concrete over or consider concreting over 300, 500, 800 acres of West Hayden Island? why isn't there a consideration of forming a joint and taking the money that might do that to form a bi-state regional facility that competes on a world-class basis, not competing against Port of Vancouver or the Port of Astoria, but look at a unified thing. Livability is certainly an issue. Cut to the chase, I was a pilot and used to fly at high altitudes requiring oxygen. And what if you could define livability, I'd love to hear it. The interesting thing is you don't notice livability. You don't notice, it's very much like oxygen. You don't notice the lack of oxygen until it starts to disappear. And that's what's happening with the livability on Hayden Island. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the, I think those are, those issues and others contained in your submission are on point. I would like to, though, celebrate, because I was on the island this weekend, to celebrate the fact that it's nice to see the new streets going in and the new street grid going in. You recall we fought very hard for that 6 years ago. I think I endured a really nasty Oregonian editorial because I was fighting on your behalf and others on Hayden Island's behalf just to put in a more proper street grid, and it's actually very rewarding to see that happen. I am concerned about the phasing of the CRC, and so I'd like to think that we could get early mitigation. I'll tell you my current concern right now is that the phasing could make things worse in the short term, and by short term I mean years. So we have work to do, no doubt, and I appreciate you all being organized and coming to us with your list. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. That gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any items to pull from the consent agenda? Carla, can you please?
We have 492 being pulled.
Okay. Where is it going?
It's going to be just for discussion.
Oh, okay. Can you read the title for emergency ordinance item 492?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement between Multnomah County, Department of County Human Services, Mental Health Call Center, jointly with Portland Bureau of Emergency Communications, Portland Police Bureau, to reduce involvement of law enforcement and direct residents in mental health crisis.
That'll be moved to the regular agenda. Any other items? Can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish? Oh, sorry. Adams?
Am I not here?
Oh, sorry. Saltzman.
Aye.
I missed somebody.
You wallflower.
Boy, I'm late. I just get left off.
And I vote aye, too. rough morning. Someone get Carla some coffee.
She got all the important people.
She got the important people.
Thank you, Commissioner Reddick. Oh, thank you.
Can you please read the title to item number 478?
Like New York, New York. It's such a great city. They named it twice.
I'm going to guide you through this, Carla.
Thank you.
Usually it's the other way around, but I got your back today.
Thanks. 478, Portland Rose Festival Foundation and 2012 Rose Festival Court.
I'm going to consider the presentation, and unless there are objections, I'm going to consider the presentation we've already seen as fulfillment of item number 478, report to council. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, item number 479?
Grant revocable permits to the Portland Rose Festival Foundation to perform activities relating to Portland Rose Festival annual celebration from May 5 through June 30, 2012.
This is our standard permit with a few ever improving flourishes. What should we know?
Well, I'm Allison Madsen, Revenue Bureau, joined obviously with Jeff Curtis and Sue Bunday. We're here today to present the ordinance that represents 105 years of tradition and another year's solid work that's been done by the festival staff, volunteers, and city and our partner agencies. Authorizes the three parades, the Waterfront City Fair, associated street closures, and some other housekeeping pieces. And just to take a moment to recognize the staff at the city, Portland Police, Transportation, Water Parks, and our regional agency partners of TriMet, Multnomah County, and ODOT, who work so hard every year to make sure that our events are amazingly successful.
Lots been said this morning, so I'll be brief, that this ultimately, your action kicks off 5 full weeks of Rose Festival activities. Some 1.6 million people will enjoy these festival activities, summarized to approximately a $45 million economic impact, of which we will be studying in the summer the actual true economic. That's an estimate based on previous years. We're doing a full study on that with the expectation that will grow to the inaugural Rock and Roll Portland Half Marathon event that will be kicking off the festival just 11 days from now. So coordinated effort by all the bureaus to make it special. President Sue Bundy made that point earlier, and I just want to thank you for your leadership as we produce the 2012 Portland Rose Festival. Thank you.
And I would just add exactly what Allison and Jeff have said. Thank you again. It means a lot. It means a lot to the community. And I think that under the leadership of the City Council, under Mayor Adams, it's been very rewarding. I know it from a volunteer perspective. I am very proud to represent the Rose Festival.
Thank you all very much. Thank you for your work on not only this, but you have a very, very difficult job. We don't often get the chance to see you at the table here at City Hall.
I try to avoid it.
Yes. But it does give me the opportunity to thank you.
Thank you.
When I look at all the events and all the details and all the permutations and all the details, and it's a big city that still has to keep moving during all these events, you are the tip of the problem solving, and so thank you for that.
Thank you.
And for you two, you just continue to polish not only the event itself, but each year you work with us in a more insightful and efficient and better way. And so thanks for this. Especially thanks, and when we're facing such difficult budgets, you continue to work with us to make sure that you get the most upside and the lowest cost to us. So thank you for that. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? Carla, can you please call the vote on the emergency ordinance?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. All right. Can you please read the title for time certain? And we are late, and I apologize for item number, it is a resolution, item number 481.
Affirm the commitment to create a strategic plan that enables the City of Portland to become a model employer of people with disabilities.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams, and I'd like to invite those who are going to present to come up to the table. I am very happy to introduce this resolution and from the Office of Equity and Human Rights and the Commission on Disabilities. This resolution is aimed into bringing into focus the needs of people with disabilities regarding employment in the City of Portland and to assist the City of Portland in meeting its legal obligations under the Americans with Disabilities Act. It's the legal thing to do. It's also the right thing to do. And I'm very happy with, pleased with the Commission on Disability for taking the leadership on this issue. Approximately 54 million Americans live with a disability, yet Americans with disabilities have an employment rate that is much lower than that of Americans without disabilities. In July of 2000, President Clinton signed an executive order calling for 100,000 individuals with disabilities to be employed by the federal government over 5 years. But few steps were taken to implement that executive order. On July 26, 2010, President Barack Obama issued an executive order increasing federal employment of individuals with disabilities, only this time with an implementation strategy identified. Recently, the city approved the creation of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, which staffs the Commission on Disability. This office is dedicated to supporting the commission, especially as it relates to ensuring fairness for all Portlanders and equal opportunity and access to city services, jobs, and contracts. In collaboration with staff from the Office of Equity and Human Rights, the Commission on Disability is bringing forward this initiative for model employment. The commission has found that an estimated 108,000 persons in the city are residents with disabilities and that they have been and continue to be underemployed and unemployed at a far greater rate than those without disabilities. This population is also confronted with high rates of poverty, inadequate health care, and being socially marginalized. A disproportionate number of people with disabilities are also people of color who also experience additional lack of opportunity and discrimination. The City of Portland initiative will include implementing and evaluating a strategic plan for increasing the city's employment of people with disabilities as a partnership between the Office of Equity, the Bureau of Human Resources, and the Commission on Disability. The Office of Equity will evaluate with the Commission the need for staffing. I'm happy to introduce Travis Wall from the Commission on Disability, who will provide more in-depth information on this resolution. And I also thank Director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, Dante James, and Anna Canwit, the Director of the Bureau of Human Resources, for their partnership in this work. Travis?
Good morning. My name is Travis Wall, and I'm a member of the Portland Commission on Disabilities and the chair of its Employment Committee. But perhaps before we get started, we can just make some introductions.
I'm Dante James. I'm the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights.
Nyla McCarthy, the proud chair of the Portland Commission on Disabilities.
I'm Phyllis Pettis, and I'm on the Employment Committee and also a commissioner on the Portland Commission on Disability.
Nisha Sexton, and I'm on the Employment Committee.
Well, let me sort of walk through what we've been doing for the past couple of years. Some of what I'm prepared to share with you today has already been alluded to by Commissioner Fritz. Thank you. I'll elaborate a little bit on some of those items. So to begin with, when the Portland Commission on Disability was started 2.5 years ago, we looked around the city and looked at ourselves as a commission and sort of asked ourselves how best to proceed. We identified four areas that we thought we should focus on going forward, and we identified four committees to begin with this initial work. And one area was the area of employment, for the reasons that Commissioner Fritz has just shared, and I'll elaborate on. So what we then did really for the next 18 months or so was we examined the challenges and barriers that individuals with disabilities face in obtaining, retaining, and advancing employment. We heard and discussed the issues with concerned and knowledgeable organizations and individuals, groups like the Bureau of Labor and Industries, which, of course, is the entity and organ that's responsible for enforcing Oregon's equal employment opportunity laws. We also talked with representatives from Disability Rights Oregon. Disability Rights Oregon is the designated entity in Oregon for protecting and advocating for the rights of individuals with disabilities. We also heard from the Commission for the Blind, as well as the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation Services, the agency that I work for. These two agencies are responsible for providing vocational rehabilitation services to individuals with disabilities in order that they may work or continue to work or advance their work. We also heard from a number of others. We talked with city staff, including Kathleen Sadat, who's the city's Diversity and Affirmative Action Manager. We also heard from fellow commissioners and committee members, including people like Jan Campbell, worked for the city for many years, is retired now, but is a woman with a disability and has dealt with disability issues in a variety of capacities, including as an advocate and as a member of the city staff. With all of this, we looked at what the city as an employer is doing in this area, and we also considered what the city might do to address this issue. You know, much has changed in the past several decades for people with disabilities. 2 to 3 decades ago, it wasn't uncommon for many of us to be locked away in institutions and consigned to the public shadows of life. Through years of concerted advocacy and direct action that we ourselves have engaged in, as well as our friends and allies and family members, through changes in statute like the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 and the Americans with Disabilities Act, and through litigation and court decisions like the Supreme Court's decision in Olmstead, we've moved forward in lots of areas. As a result, we enjoy far more opportunities and freedoms than we did in the past. But significant challenges still are in front of us, and one of these areas is employment. As Commissioner Fritz shared with you, we represent a rather large group of the population, although we are a minority population. It's been estimated that somewhere between 18 to 22% of the general population have a disability. And that would mean, of course, that roughly 108,000 Portlanders are people with disabilities. Notwithstanding our numbers, we are among the most underemployed and unemployed of citizens. Recently, the national unemployment rate for people with disabilities was pegged at about 17%, compared to about 9% for able-bodied persons. But other data that we have at our disposal suggests a much greater inequity. The U.S. Census Bureau most recent report on disabilities and employment estimated that about 35% of persons with disabilities were employed, compared to 72% of people of able-bodied persons or persons without disabilities. And in fact, the unemployment rate is much greater for people with severe or significant disabilities, where it approaches 70%. The current economic situation is bleak for people with disabilities. As the economy has declined, the numbers of people with disabilities have been laid off. We've been laid off in great numbers, but in fact, we've been laid off in numbers that exceeds our peers in the workforce, eroding the gains that we've made in recent years in the area of employment. The corrosive effect of underemployment and unemployment cannot be understated. They include limited and lost income, loss and denial of vitally needed healthcare services, isolation and social exclusion, the loss of dignity and self-worth. But perhaps the most destructive effect is on the dreams of many people with disabilities, which continue to be deferred and denied. The causes of the continuing underemployment and unemployment are myriad. While it appears that outright discrimination and prejudice is less common than it used to be, many of us remain uninformed or ill-informed about disability and believe that people with disability are incapable of work or less capable than others. There are structural barriers to employment, including a lack of access and a lack of reasonable accommodations in many workplaces, as well as rules and policies, including public rules and policies that restrict or limit people's ability to earn a competitive wage and work in integrated workplaces. And many employers continue to fear that in hiring people with disabilities, they will have workers that are less motivated, less productive, less reliable, less loyal, when in fact the available data indicates just the opposite. In looking to the situation here in Portland, we came away with the impression that Portland's public and private employers, including the city, are not much different than their public and private counterparts elsewhere. The city has policies and procedures to address its responsibilities under the ADA and under Oregon's Fair Employment Law, but these are limited and they don't appear to affirmatively address the issue. Moreover, the city collects little data on disabilities in its workforce, including the numbers of individuals hired, not to speak of data on retention, advancement, and severance. As a result, we don't know exactly how the city is doing and whether it has made and is continuing to make progress or not. However, our collective impressions and the lack of evidence that the city stands out in this area suggests that the city, or we as a city rather, have work to do and ground to cover to live up to the commitment we've made through the Portland Plan in the spirit, if not the letter, of the ADA and the Oregon EEOC laws. So, what can and should we do as a city? In addressing this issue, we learned that a number of cities, including Baltimore and Chicago, and a number of states, including Massachusetts and Alaska, are seeking through numerous initiatives and activities to become exemplary employers of individuals with disabilities. Perhaps most notably, President Obama issued the executive order that we heard about a few minutes ago. We believe the President's executive order is an excellent basis for moving forward, at least initially, and implementing the commitment that we've made through the Portland Plan. Accordingly, we constructed the resolution and the proposal that we've presented to you. Through this resolution, we are asking that you commit the city to, one, becoming a model employer of people with disabilities, to developing, implementing, and evaluating a strategic plan for increasing the city's employment of persons with disabilities. This will entail, if adopted, we hope, instituting a data collection and analysis process so that we begin to have the baseline metrics and we have the targets and the data to set the targets and to measure the outcomes as we move forward with the plan. To complete the assessment process that we've begun of the city's capacity to employ individuals with disabilities, including reviewing city's policies and procedures to identify where policies and procedures may need to be refined or revised, or where new policies need to be developed. Identifying the objectives, strategies, and timelines for moving forward and metrics for measuring, evaluating, and reporting back to you and to the Commission on progress. We hope that you will see fit to designate a senior-level manager for responsibility for overseeing and developing this plan and its implementation with city bureaus, other managers, and staff. And over time, we hope that you will evaluate the need for a dedicated staff position responsible for coordinating the city's responsibilities under Title I of the ADA. You're probably aware of the fact that the city does have a dedicated staff position to carrying out Title II of the ADA, which relates to public accommodations and access. However, at this point, there is no staff position that's responsible for fulfilling the employment responsibilities of the ADA. We additionally recommend that the plan be developed and implemented in partnership with the Bureau of Human Resources, the Office of Equity, and us as a commission. We recognize that the Bureau, as well as the Office, have a great deal of expertise and responsibility to bring to bear on this issue, as well as a responsibility to carry out certain functions that are vital to or essentially a part of this proposal. We also have a wealth of personal and professional experience and knowledge on this issue. In fact, the proposal contains considerable resources in the back of it to help provide the city with information to make at least the initial steps. We believe that high-level leadership is needed, including yours, to convey the importance of this resolution, ensure that a meaningful plan is developed, and that the plan and its objectives are addressed and fulfilled. On a related basis, we need a high-level manager to keep you, us, and the public informed on the progress of this effort and to guide it to completion. We believe that the costs involved with this proposal are limited and that some of the work can be delivered as a part of the EEO work that the city is already carrying out. We would note that the city also has a responsibility to fulfill much of what we're talking about here under both the ADA as well as under Oregon Equal Employment Opportunity Law. In the event upon the completion of the strategic plan, there are activities that have costs, then that's the time we would hope to sit down and talk with you as well as staff about how to move forward. In closing, we're asking that you approve this resolution and begin to make Portland a model employer of people with disabilities, because it's the right thing to do. Let's fulfill the commitment we've made through the Portland plan to make Portland a place where everyone has access to opportunities necessary to satisfy their essential needs, advance their well-being, and achieve their full potential. It's also the law. I mean, it's also going to be good business for the city as an employer and as a representative governmental body. If you've had a chance to sort of dig through the tome that's our report, you'll see that we outline the business case for the city as an employer and as a public business to employ people with disabilities. Individuals with disabilities have valuable and knowledgeable experience to bring to the table. You know, many of us have overcome challenges and difficulties that many others of us have not been able to overcome. Moreover, we also happen to represent and reflect the diversity of the city as a whole and the population as a whole. As a group, we represent disability is more prevalent among certain groups, including certain other disadvantaged groups, such as African Americans, where roughly 24.3% of people have disabilities. 24.3% of Native Americans are people with disabilities. 20.9% of Latinos are people with disabilities, whereas 18.3% of whites have disabilities and 16.6% of Asians have disabilities. We would also point out that people with disabilities are highly productive, loyal, and highly motivated workers. There's an abundance of data out there about this. It's something that an increasing number of employers, public and private, are beginning to recognize and appreciate. And also recognizing that in trying to address the labor shortages that we're going to be facing in the coming years as baby boomers retire, that again, people with disabilities represent a resource available to us all. So with all of this and more, we recommend the resolution, and of course, we're glad to answer any questions you may have.
Does anybody else want to say anything?
Actually, I do. I want to thank you all, first of all, on behalf of the entire commission. The last time you saw us was in August when we filled the council chambers, actually, with an abundance of our constituents, people with disabilities, representing all of the groups that Travis talked about. We weren't quite able to get that many people here today, but I think we did a pretty good showing for kind of a normal thing. I just want to share with you a couple of statistics that Travis didn't have, and statistics I think can be really misleading, but we do know that nationally, people with disabilities are the most abused population. Women with mental health and with developmental disabilities are sexually assaulted 6 times out of 10 for the population, and people with physical disabilities are often the people who are physically assaulted. So I think an important issue, since I direct the abuse prevention, and I wish the guy was here to talk about prevention. The state does have an abuse prevention and education unit, and I direct it for investigations about abuse. There's huge fiscal savings to be had if we are employing people appropriately with disabilities who are no longer invisible but actually have living wage jobs and are being integrated into society and not just kind of really on the peripheral fringes, those people will be less likely to be abused sexually, physically, financially, and in a lot of the ways that I can tell you my office is busy across the state. And this impact for Portland, which is, of course, one of the largest centers of people with what we call invisible disabilities, mental illness particularly, and I think you see that in council every time you have hearings, those folks end up in disproportionate numbers being picked up by first responders right now because they are not appropriately employed, housed, or treated. So I kind of wanted to say that. And then just on a personal note, I wanted to say that I spent most of my life hiding a disability. I was in an accident with a severe brain injury. I spent a year in special education and warehoused at the age of 13. And when I came out of that, I was pretty clear that I wanted to do what I could to work to end the kind of treatment that I saw in there. And I've spent my life that. But ironically, I hid the fact that I had a seizure disorder as a result of that head trauma as many years as I possibly could, terrified that I was going to have a grand mal seizure in my offices and go down. And it wasn't until I went to the state to work in this position, directing the Abuse Prevention and Education Unit, that I was really able to come out 14 years ago, honestly, about the fact that I have a disability. So when we're gathering the statistics, which we're excited to be doing in partnership with Dante and the Office of Equity, and thank you again for funding that to give us a place to work, we know that we will find people who will not show up statistically. That's why statistics are always such an odd thing for us. Because they will be afraid, as I was, to admit that they have disabilities, because they'll be afraid of losing their jobs, or because they'll be afraid that people will be concerned about the accommodations. I can tell you that I have personally not needed many accommodations, and the fiscal impact of accommodations for most people are pretty minimal, so I kind of want to reassure you on that front.
I have one question. Once you've concluded this particular focus work on model employment practices, and Portland is a model employer, what other issues do you have in the queue that you might address? Because I'm guessing housing will at some point be on your radar, but what are the other issues you're going to look at?
Well, I certainly think we will be looking into housing. I think that our hopes with this proposal is that we can take this proposal and push it out into the community. We hope that the city will play a leadership role around this and set a real example going forward. And with that, we can then begin to go to other public employers in the region, as well as other private employers within the city, and look to them to also implement practices that are developed through this process to better employ people with disabilities. I think one of the things I would say is that, you know, I don't want to diminish the importance of housing, and in fact, there are members among us who work very actively on that issue. I think one of the things we've recognized with employment is that employment really is a pivotal issue. You know, if you're employed, you can begin to secure other things that aren't available to you if you're not employed. And we're well aware of that, of course, when it comes to people with psychiatric disabilities and the homeless population, that work is a critical issue. And I would amplify in relation to that population that one of the things we found with that group and with some other people, that just getting to work helps people deal with their disability, helps alleviate their symptoms. So the very process of work is beneficial on a variety of levels, both, if you will, therapeutically, to put quotes around that, as well as economically. But
I can answer your question, Commissioner Fritz. We have four subcommittees, and I'm extremely proud of the work that this subcommittee has done on this issue, and our other three subcommittees are working equally hard on their issues. One of them is accessibility and the built environment, and I know you've met with some of those folks. We conducted an audit on council chambers, and we will continue to kind of be working collaboratively with our partners in the community to take a look at accessibility in all of its fashions within the city. Another one is on health and wellness, and we're partnering with the county as well as with the state to take a look at issues related to health of our citizens, factors that contribute to disabilities. There's so many environmental issues. And the fourth one is public outreach and education, and I personally have a brainchild that I'm very committed to, which is to create a leadership institute for people with disabilities. Partnering with folks on that, I do that at the state level. We're concerned about the absence of people with disabilities across class, across ethnicity, across age groups, and their representation in the political process. So we're going to be working to find folks in the community and try to mentor and cultivate and bring them up to speed.
And I applaud you for putting employment first, and I think that's absolutely appropriate. And it sounds like with your second committee you mentioned around access,
mm-hmm.
that not only intersects, let's say, the work that the Parks Bureau does, making sure our parks and public spaces are accessible, but it also would bring the Office of Equity, Planning and Sustainability, Bureau of Development Services, and housing together to look at questions of access as our population ages and as we have more older adults with disabilities. Mm-hmm. The question of access and how we embed that in our code in terms of incentives, in terms of code enforcement, in terms of affirmative policies, I think you can provide a leadership role in helping us work across bureaus to get that right. And that after all, is one of the promises of the Office of Equity approach. And also your work is to go across bureaus and help us get it right. So exactly. We really look forward to partnering with you on that.
And I also wanted to talk a little bit about the housing work that we're doing, and I don't want to sort of take away from what we're talking about right now and to focus on housing. But and thank you all for hearing us, and a special thanks to Commissioner Fritz as well. A number of us served on the Analysis of Impediments to Fair Housing Committee and other committees with the Housing Bureau, the current Fair Housing Advocacy Group as well. So there are several of us who are serving as liaisons to various bureau committees.
Yeah, and since we learned in that nationally is about half of fair housing complaints are filed by people with disabilities.
Yes.
So we have a lot of work to do, both in terms of how people are treated when they apply and also making sure that apartment owners understand that they're covered by the ADA and that their units mm-hmm. have to be accessible to people with disabilities. So, well, thank you very much.
And if I might, Mr. Mayor and Council, as the director of the office that the Commission on Disabilities sits within, I just want to take a moment to commend and congratulate the Commission and the committee on their hard work in bringing this forward, and truly encourage the Council to adopt this resolution. I think the Commission is an example of a model Commission functioning in this city, in finding and bringing forward their issues, and clearly as the Portland Plan and the success of the Portland Plan speaks to, you know, equity is the mainstay of the Portland Plan, and this is about equity for all the members of the city. And so I truly want to congratulate and commend their hard work and encourage the Council to adopt this resolution.
I move the adoption of the resolution.
So is there anyone that wishes to testify on this before we move to adoption?
No one else signed up.
All right. Carla, can you please call the vote?
Fish?
Well, I want to begin by congratulating my colleague, Commissioner Amanda Fritz, for all the work that she's done establishing the Office of Equity, supporting the work of this commission, and really her passion for this work. She worked closely with the mayor to get to this point, so I applaud both of them. But Commissioner Fritz is the point person in moving this forward, and I think she's done a marvelous job. To the citizens before us today, in my 4 years, I have witnessed many reports from citizen-led groups. And frankly, they've run the gamut in terms of effectiveness. And what I've learned over time is that when groups such as yourself, commissions, advisory bodies, boards, when they have a clear focus in their work, and you do, you have a clear strategic focus, when they are thoughtful and deliberate, and I don't remember a presentation as more thoughtful than the one that, sir, you read or you presented to us earlier, and when they are as clearly collaborative in terms of next steps, wanting to invite us to be partners, which is the way this form of government works best. When all of those align, we have a chance to do great things. And so I thank you for the time that you've devoted to this work and the seriousness. And I think in addition to being a model employer, I think you can also pave the way for being a model commission in how you approach your work. So again, thank you to Commissioner Fritz, to my colleagues, to you for your good work, and to my newest tenant, Dante. We look forward to moving this forward to an implementation phase and then to working with you on other issues of concern. Aye. Thank you.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank the Commission for this very good report. And I think, as my colleague said, it's focused, and that always helps. And it's focused on a very important thing, which is employment. I think regardless of whether you have a disability, employment, having a job, is so critical to mental health and to socialization for anybody, regardless of disability or not. I saw a recent poll of people who are unemployed and through layoffs, and 36% of them are still just absolutely devastated by it. And I think the disability community deals with that every day. So our goal as a country, as a city, is to be model employers and to get people to work again, and to get people who haven't been in the workforce into the workforce, providing those opportunities. So I stand with you, and I want to thank most of all Commissioner Amanda Fritz for leading this effort and being so passionate about making sure that we have good employment opportunities and the city is a model employer. So thank you. Aye.
Leonard.
I, too, want to thank the Commissioner on Disability and Commissioner Fritz. This is a very important document and one that I think we need to embrace. I strongly believe that a number of people's struggles can be addressed the job. And so this is really very appropriate and something I intend to embrace. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you so much for all of your hard work. If many politicians use the word I a lot. This council tends to use the word we, because we work with you, we work together, we get things done together. And we together established the Commission on Disability in 2009. And then you have taken it to great heights beyond my wildest dreams. And I very much appreciate your diligence and carefulness in bringing forward this resolution and the proposal, and your willingness to work with staff, your support of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and of Dante James as our new director. And particularly thank Anna Canwit and Kathleen Sadat, who are here with us today from the Bureau of Human Resources, who have worked in partnership with you and who are cross-commissioner going to be working on this issue. It probably belongs with the Human Resources team because they do help all of the bureaus with hiring, and yet it also properly is our job as part of the Office of Equity and Human Rights and the Commission on Disability to continue to shepherd it through. So I thank you so much for that. It's we the people, as was mentioned earlier, working together on something that which is really important. There's been a lot of talk about, well, what is this Office of Equity going to do? Isn't it just more talk? Well, no, it's not. This is it. We're talking about jobs. We're talking about contracts. We're talking about real people with real needs and the need to do something urgently. So it's less than 2 months since Dante has been in, the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. Because of your partnership, we're able to bring this motion forward today, and we'll be moving to implementation with full speed ahead also. So thank you so much for all that you do. And again, thank you to all of my colleagues for their willingness. This is going to be in all of the bureaus. We're not just talking about a few bureaus implementing this. We're talking about every bureau understanding the value of people with disabilities on our team, being part of our loyal and diligent work on behalf of the citizens of Portland. Thank you so much. Aye.
Adams?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Fritz. The F's are always hard this time of day. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for your leadership on this issue. Thank you to the Disability Commission for your great work in seeing this through. It's great to have Director James here, Office of Equity, that's going to make sure that everything gets integrated together, and Travis, great report and explanation of what we're considering today. I like especially the part where you said that we're no different than a lot of other places we aspire to be better than. Very pleased to vote aye. So approved.
Thank you very much.
All right. Can you please read the title for item number 493?
493.
Authorize the chief of police or designee to execute access and indemnification agreements.
493.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This was 494.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in the wrong place. 494. Apologize. No wonder you had a see. Now you're keeping. You got my back.
It's teamwork. Yes, it's me.
494. Authorize the chief of police or designee to execute access and indemnification agreements with property owners for installation of surveillance equipment on their property.
So we're going to move this to May 30th in the morning. So
without objection.
Without objection, so done. Can you please read the title for item number 495?
Amend the business license law to provide full confidentiality to taxpayers under any tax amnesty program.
So I'm pleased to, along with the Bureau of Revenue, bring this forward for council consideration. The emergency has been applied on tax and fee measures like this. You want to make a expedient decision, so to execute it as quickly as possible. This has been based on a thorough review by the Bureau of Best Practices, not only at a local level, but on other state and regional levels. It is responsive to the fact that we've just gone through one of the worst recessions since the Great Depression. But it also makes it really clear that this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for folks who, through the tough times or just innocently because they were not aware, failed to conform to the rules that the director, Lanham, will go over. They, to be clear, they will still pay penalties. They will still pay interest. Sorry, they will not pay penalties. So the fact that they either made a mistake or that they maliciously ignored their responsibilities as a fee or taxpayer, they're still going to have to pay for that, not only what they owe us, but additional interest beyond that. But they do get to avoid some penalties, and that's why we're bringing this before the City Council for their consideration. Director Lanham.
Thank you very much, Mayor, for that introduction. My name is Thomas Lanham. I'm the Revenue Bureau Director. And as you know, the Revenue Bureau is implementing a first-ever tax amnesty program for businesses that have fallen behind on their city and county tax obligations. The amnesty period is slated to begin on May 15th and will run for 60 days. It will also apply to the Multnomah County business income tax. We're appearing before the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners tomorrow to have them hear a change to their ordinance, to their code that would mirror this change today. Under the program, businesses that have failed to register with the Revenue Bureau or that have failed to file taxes in the past three tax years would be eligible for a full waiver of all penalties and a 50% reduction of interest. Our interest is currently 10% per annum. That would be reduced to 5%. And a key element of the success of any amnesty program, and we have looked at 22 amnesty programs, as the mayor spoke about, also read a great deal of literature about best practices around tax amnesty programs. A key element is that taxpayers that step forward under amnesty need to have some reasonable assurances that their confidentiality will be protected. Otherwise, they are less likely to step forward if they can expect to see their names published in the Oregonian at some point. So the point of the ordinance before you today is to make it very clear in the city code that the Bureau and all officials involved in the administration of this program are expected to keep the names, the addresses, and any other identifying information about a taxpayer that steps forward under this amnesty program confidential. And I will stop there and ask for any questions you may have.
I just one question. I know it was kind of alluded to when we first talked about this, but so this ordinance does comply with public records laws, then?
Yeah, the city attorney's office, that's an excellent question. The city attorney's office has reviewed that, and the Oregon Public Records Law under ORS 192-502 talks about the types of information that would be regarded as confidential. And there is a provision within that portion of the ORS that speaks to the intent of the person applying for amnesty, and in particular providing the information to the Bureau on our tax amnesty application, that if they provided this information in good faith and the public body has obliged itself in good faith to not disclose the information when the public interest would suffer by the disclosure. So that is the particular provision of ORS that this is aimed at.
Thank you.
Do you concur with that, Mr. Walters?
Yeah.
Okay, just for the record. All right, any other council discussion? Does anyone wish to testify on this matter?
No one else signed up.
Carly, can you please call the vote?
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 495 is approved. Can you please read the title for the item that was pulled, which is item number 492, emergency ordinance.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement between Multnomah County Department of County Human Services Mental Health Call Center, jointly with the Portland Bureau of Emergency Communications and Portland Police Bureau, to reduce involvement of law enforcement and direct residents in mental health crisis.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. I had this on consent because it's something that we've been working on for quite some time, and I think that many people are aware of it. I understand that some citizens asked for it to be pulled for discussion, so I'd be happy to turn it over to for public testimony. And if Director Lisa Turley from the Bureau of Emergency Communications is here. Did you want to just explain briefly what it is?
Yes. Lisa Turley, Director Bowick. Good morning. And basically what this is a first step for our organization to try to move some of our calls over to what I would say more qualified mental health professionals. We see this as a first step. We've worked with PPB and Multnomah County Crisis Line to get this program in place, and it is a six-month pilot at this point, and we're going to reevaluate as we go. We've been working with Safer PDX and the Bazelon Project, and we've learned a lot of information, and we're hopeful that this is, as I said, the first of many steps to move these kinds of calls to more appropriate response.
Could I ask a question? Could you just give us like an example of a type of call that might be referred to this?
Sure. Actually, there are very clear criteria, yeah. And I will tell you that they are about people who, if they're threatening to jump from a bridge or structure, this does not qualify. If they need medical attention, this does not qualify. This is a suicidal subject. If they have a weapon and they're outside or in public, it does not qualify. Or if they have a weapon inside a building where other people are present. So we're really looking at the person who's having suicidal thoughts and who is not creating a danger to the public or an immediate danger to themselves besides having a suicidal thought. We'll transfer them over.
So it's particularly related to suicidal thoughts.
That's correct.
Okay. Thanks.
And it's, I appreciate the question, Commissioner Saltzman, because it's taken us a while. The Office, Bureau of Emergency Communications runs on protocols that the operators, the call takers, answer the question, as you well know from being on the council. So we wanted to make sure, working with the county mental health experts, with the county's medical advisors and others, to make sure that we were teasing out the right level of calls. And as Director Turley says, this is the first step to make sure that people are safe, both the caller and those in the immediate vicinity. So we are hoping to expand and have other measures that will be helpful. This is the first one.
So on one of the criteria, I just want to follow up. I'm assuming that the operators, the call takers, the dispatchers have discretion, even if there is a written protocol. And the example I'm thinking of was example you gave, Lisa, of if somebody calls and they're in a structure and they say they have a weapon and they say they're alone, I would expect your dispatchers to use some discretion as to whether or not that's a believable statement.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And what our job is to do is to screen that and set it up for police. We may also transfer the caller,
okay,
so that the police are en route and setting up and the caller is being managed by Multnomah County Health.
Although you said one of the exceptions, not one of the exceptions, but one of the examples of transferring them to the county or a crisis team was if they were in a structure with a weapon, but nobody else was present. So ordinarily, you would transfer them over. And
right.
I guess what I'm asking is, that would be one where my brain would tickle a little bit, and I would probably want to ask a couple of questions to assure myself, were
right.
I the call taker, that in fact there was nobody around before they were transferred.
Right, and you're correct. The call taker will be using a lot of discretion on these calls, and we are actually in the process of giving our folks additional training on kind of what to listen for and to use that dispatcher discretion and that intuition.
Great, thanks.
All right, any public testimony?
I didn't have a sign-up sheet, but we have people here.
Please come forward.
Okay, a little nervous here. I haven't done this before, but my name's James Mazzocco.
Don't be nervous. It's just us.
Yeah, I know. I am on the advisory council with the Mental Health Association of Portland. I just prepared a statement here, so it's pretty short. Portlanders share a problem. Those of us who suffer from mental illness routinely contemplate and commit suicide. It is not a problem limited to our city, but its effects can be mitigated here. The Mental Health Association of Portland offers thanks to David Hidalgo and the staff of the Multnomah County Crisis Center, to Lisa Turley and the staff of the Bureau of Emergency Communications, and to the Portland City Council and their staff, especially Commissioner Amanda Fritz, for thinking through a difficult problem and attempting the beginning of a solution. Mental illness and suicide affect Portland's entire community, friends, families, neighbors, people we care about. To contemplate suicide is not unusual, nor does it indicate the need for police action. It is not in itself a threat to anyone. It is not illegal. It is a normal symptom of a set of common illnesses. We routinely tell those in our community who are contemplating suicide, especially children and teenagers, to talk about those thoughts with someone they trust. The flaw in this approach is that the suicidal are reluctant to trust others. People with mental illness call 911 because they are desperate, but operators do not have the time to listen until the caller's suicidal feeling passes. They are there to dispatch police, fire, and medical personnel as needed. A common patient approach is, however, integral to the Multnomah County Crisis Hotline. It makes sense to simply transfer calls by the suicidal from the BOEC to the Crisis Hotline. There must be discretion about transferring these calls. The confidentiality of the caller is vital to maintaining trust, and 911 and crisis workers must be able to determine who is at risk and who poses a risk to others. The Mental Health Association of Portland would like to reemphasize that suicide is not illegal. Attempting suicide is not illegal. Talking about suicide is not illegal. Mental illness and addiction are not illegal. When 911 operators relay calls to the police from persons who are having a mental health emergency, we have effectively criminalized mental illness. With today's vote, Portland City Council shows awareness of this inadvertent criminalization of mental illness and an intention to change it. We must ask, however, that you routinely review the capacity of the County Crisis Hotline to respond knowledgeably and resourcefully to Portland's mental health emergency calls. The county's provision of mental health services is at best spotty, and the inconsistent ability to recruit and train competent mental health services staff is well documented. Thank you again for your attention to this complicated problem.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and we are supportive of this step forward in dealing with mental health crises and how they relate to police and the unfortunate circumstances we've seen many times where violence is used against people with mental illnesses. Our allies at Mental Health Association of Portland have a firmer grasp on the appropriate way to handle such calls than we do, but we definitely are concerned about how many times the Portland police have gone out and ended up using tasers or guns on people who are threatening suicide. So we hope that we can accelerate to the next step where more of the calls that end up with people dead end up transferred to the mental health professionals as well. The most important question to take care of is who decides when it's time to stop talking. And the prime example of this is what happened with Bradley Morgan in January when he was on the phone with a 911 operator who was clearly relaying the information she was gathering from Mr. Morgan to others at 911 and to therefore to the police, and was getting progress made. And if you listen to the call, it's very heartbreaking because Morgan starts softening up and saying, hey, you know, you're actually making me think again about whether I want to commit suicide or not. But then the police showed up, and he hung up his phone. And from there, we know what happened. This is kind of similar to the circumstances where we had people talking to hostage negotiators from the police, and they ended up getting shot, Raymond Guerter, Paul Stewart, and Aaron Campbell, of course. So we hope that that issue of when it's time to stop talking and send the police in gets a lot of serious study as this discussion moves forward, especially with the Department of Justice looking at this very question of how Portland police deal with people who have mental illnesses. I was a little bit surprised to see that this particular item did not have anything filled out on the public involvement section.